This podcast was recorded on Thursday, December 20th at 11:08 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like the ugly sweater craze may have ended.
Yes, when you start manufacturing deliberately ugly sweaters, there should be a law against that.
Totally agree. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those shrewd Snollygosters who look for your votes, then forget about you until the next time they need your vote. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up later in the podcast, we introduce a new feature. We're going to award our Snollygoster of the Week.
I can't wait. But first, an early poll of Democrats running for president features Sherrod Brown. At first glance, a new Quinnipiac poll out this week may not paint a pretty picture for Brown's chances at winning the White House. Among the candidates, he comes in dead last, well behind Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Beto O'Rourke. Nobody knows who he is, it seems. 77% basically said, Sherrod who?
There are positives, though, Steve. There are positives. And I'm going to argue that this poll actually has good news for Sherrod Brown for two reasons. One, he made the poll. There are about 30 Democrats talking about running for president, but he made Quinnipiac's list of 10 Democrats. So that has to be a victory for a guy who's only recently appeared in the national presidential discussion. You had the other reason.
Yeah, and of all the Democrats, he had the lowest unfavorable rating. Just 9% don't like him. Only 2% of Democrats don't like him. Compare that with Hillary Clinton's 61% unfavorability rating in this poll.
Of course, you can't dislike those who you don't know.
That's true.
So that might be it. Here to talk about the poll is Quinnipiac pollster Peter Brown. Peter, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thank you.
First question, why did you include Sherrod Brown in this poll? There are many names out there. I think the Washington Post had 29 or 30 possible Democratic candidates. Why did Sherrod Brown make more or less your top 10?
There's no reason one way or another. We were doing a list of those we thought might be active candidates for the Democratic nomination for president. There's no big science to it. We just went through a list and decided who we would include and who we wouldn't, and many were obvious. You know, former Vice President Biden, former Secretary of State Clinton. Others, you know, Kamala Harris was less obvious, but she's obviously going to run for president. But she's not very well known. But you're right, Sherrod Brown is not well known. But that's not necessarily, in his case, a terrible thing. The fact that he has a positive, favorable, unfavorable ratio, again, with only 80% of voters saying they don't know enough about him to have an opinion, it's still not a bad place to be for someone who wants to be an up-and-comer.
So what do you think this poll, it's very early, Peter. You know that. We know that. It's extremely early. But what does this poll do for Sherrod Brown? Does it prompt him to make an exploratory trip to Iowa or New Hampshire? Does it prompt perhaps someone to give him some money? Does it prompt folks who want to give him money thinking, this guy's got no chance? What does it do at this very, very early date for a possible Sherrod Brown campaign?
It gives him a talking point. The talking point is that, you know, 80% of voters may not know who he is, but among the 20% that do, he's got a positive spin, and that's not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Secretary Clinton, for instance, has, you know, a 2-to-1 negative, and everybody knows who former Secretary Clinton is. My guess is that, you know, in a generic sense, you know, who would you rather be in this? Based on this poll, Brown at least has some room to grow. The problem with Senator Clinton in this is that everybody knows who she is, and therefore, they're not going to change their minds.
So you say this poll isn't necessarily a top 10 of the Democrats who could run for president. Where do you
it's
think
it's a top 10, not the top?
Yeah,
10.
It is. Yeah, it's a top 10. It's not a definitive list. Where do you think Sherrod Brown? You know, we heard the term lane a lot in the 2016 presidential election. Going into 2020, do you think if he does have a lane to president, is it just as a Rust Belt workers' rights kind of guy, or what do you think his strategy would be if there is a lane for Sherrod Brown to the White House?
Well, that would be the lane, obviously. He does have a workers' rights background. And in the Democratic Party, that's a good thing.
We're talking with Peter Brown from Quinnipiac University, Assistant Director of Polling there, here on Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. Peter, looking big picture, Joe Biden had the highest favorability rating among the Democrats you surveyed, 53%, whopping 84% approval rating among Democrats. Not surprising. Is he the favorite right now?
Well, he's certainly doing the best in this poll and a lot of other polls, too. But this is very, very early. And he is a candidate who is very well known and very well liked. But there are a number of questions about whether, in fact, he will continue to be the front runner.
Yeah, I mean, his age is going to be the biggest factor, I would guess.
Well, his age is going to be a factor. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, Vice President Biden is popular with the rank and file. And because he's popular and because it seems like he's been in American politics forever, he gets a lot of support. And again, people know who he is. Unlike former Ms. Clinton, they know that Biden, they generally like Biden. It's almost a 2-to-1 positive ratio for him. Those are good numbers to have. But the question is, over time, will he hold up?
You talk about how Biden is still incredibly popular among the rank and file. It seems like Hillary Clinton is, too, at least among the rank and file Democrats. She does have a 61% unfavorability rating overall, but she's at 70% among Democrats. She has a 70% favorability rating. I don't think there's any way she wins the nomination again, but were you surprised at this rating at all for Hillary Clinton?
No, not really. She has a core of supporters, but remember, though everybody knows who she is in the electorate, and by a roughly 2-to-1 margin, they don't look at her favorably. That's a very tough situation to change for her.
Does she look at these numbers and jump into the race, or does she look at these numbers and say, you know what, my time has passed, do you think?
That involves my being able to read her mind in terms of motivation and Not my ability.
You're a pollster, not a mind reader. I understand, Peter. That by all, we don't want you to speculate and become a pundit. But they're difficult numbers for sure, to say the least. Who's based on this research? Who is a candidate to watch?
Well, there are a number of younger candidates. Kamala Harris. I don't want to leave anybody out here.
Yeah, you had Cory Booker, and of course, Beto O'Rourke.
Beto O'Rourke. There is one new name that we included, and that's Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York. But he's not particularly popular either, although better known. He has a 22% favorable, 32% unfavorable rating. And that's not particularly good numbers for him because he's fairly well known.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of people who are not Democrats, your poll, it did rank President Trump, and it gave him a pretty low favorability rating, not surprisingly.
It's 40%.
Yeah. Here at Snollygoster, we've been keeping a close eye also on John Kasich's presidential aspirations. And I know you don't have any poll numbers on him in front of you. Where would you rank him overall in this ecosystem of potential candidates for 2020? Where would you slot him?
Tell me what party he's running.
Right? That's the problem, isn't it? There's not a real lane. There's not a real path for him to the White House at this point, it seems. He might be a viable candidate, but no path.
Well, it's hard to get votes within your party when you are the most popular candidate of the other party. In other words, Governor Kasich is every Democrat's favorite candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that it would be very helpful if he decides to run as an independent or third party candidate. But in a normal race like is shaping up, in which the Democrats have their candidate and the Republicans have their candidate, it's not an easy path for someone like Governor Kasich, who who does have a lot of support, but it's not an easy path, as you say.
When you see
someone in that situation,
when you see a presidential candidate with his approval rating at 40%, is that a number that can be overcome and the person can win re-election? What has polling history shown us?
Oh, absolutely, is it possible? 40 is not a great number, but no one should at this stage just say this number makes him re-electable. President Trump is a pretty good politician, and he's roundly criticized by both parties at times. But nobody, I think, says, oh, he can't possibly get reelected. 40's not a great number, but it's not that far from the high 40s. You know, and that's probably what the winner will need.
And he was at, I think he was only at 43, 44% when he was elected, if that.
Right. One of the reasons why you have so many Democratic candidates is that there's a widespread belief on the Democratic side, especially about how vulnerable he is. And many on the Democratic side think that the key is winning the nomination. And if you win the nomination, the general election would be easier. I don't have an opinion about that. Not my job. But, you know, there is that view.
Yes, I think there was that view in 2016 as well.
There certainly was.
There was that view in 2016, and there was that view about some of Trump's supporters in 2018.
Yeah, there was some view in 2012 with Barack Obama. I think a lot of Republicans thought that he was ripe for the picking, and they surprised him there. So anyway, Peter Brown from Quinnipiac University, the Polling Institute there, thank you very much for joining us here on Snolly Goster.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Have a happy holiday.
Thank you. You too.
Take care.
Bye.
This is normally the time of year when lawmakers head home to do everything that snollygosters do around Christmas. Smoke a pipe by the fireplace, maybe go caroling on the doorsteps of all their donors.
I'd love to see snollygosters caroling. I wonder what would be their favorite Christmas carol.
Something Scrooge-related, maybe?
Yes, probably. Anyway, but they might have to put those holiday festivals and festivities on hold. The governor this week followed expectations in vetoing a gun bill. It used to be a stand your ground bill, but that language was stripped out. The bill would still make a big change to Ohio's self-defense law. It would shift the burden of proof from the accused to prosecutors.
That's right. Ohio is currently the only state in the nation where the accused have to prove that they acted in self-defense. It's guilty until proven innocent. Still, Kasich vetoed the gun bill this week, and he said why during an appearance at the Columbus Metropolitan Club.
So why would I sign a bill that gives more power to the gun advocates?
In his veto, he also criticized lawmakers for not including language for a so-called red flag law that would let courts take the guns of people who are deemed at risk of committing violence.
Nothing is certain, but Republican leaders have talked about a possible veto override. That would require 60 votes in the House and 20 in the Senate. So if you're a state House Republican dead set on pushing the vetoed gun bill into law, you might want to change your holiday travel plans, especially after Christmas, because I believe they come back on the 27th is the date they would come back.
Might be heading back to Columbus.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Last couple of weeks for John Kasich, you know, it's not a surprise that he vetoed that gun bill. He basically was complaining they didn't include anything else except for the change in the burden of proof. He wanted, you know, other things in there and mad about not having it in there, so he vetoed it. And he's got a couple abortion bills. He's got to decide whether or not to veto. That could come soon after we finish recording this podcast. And he also added gender identity to the list of characteristics that you can't discriminate against.
Right, for state employees.
You know, it's hardly the things you want to run on if you're going to seek the Republican nomination for President of the United States. Sympathy towards folks, transgender folks, and also loosening or tightening gun restrictions is not the normal path to winning a GOP nomination.
Well, John Kasich's time in Columbus has not been normal. He's always been a different cat, if you will. And the transgender protections that he signed in law only go into law until January 14th when he leaves office. It would be up to now Governor-elect Mike DeWine to opt to continue these protections. So Mike DeWine, having the extremely conservative record that he does, I would expect he would not do that. But maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Well, we don't know yet. And Mike DeWine, perhaps to his credit, is not really commenting on these things. He's saying we only have one governor at a time, and he's going to wait until he gets sworn in. So, which is, you know, it's good for him. That's the way to do it, I think.
Yeah, and this is normally the time of the show where we would, since we're talking about Kasich, it would be a good time to transition to our weekly segment, John Kasich GPS. But, alas, we're taking a week off. It's the holidays, and the governor is staying close to home, as we said.
He did speak at the Columbus Metropolitan Club this week, didn't say much. So we'll get back to tracking him next week.
Finally, we need to say that we are launching a new segment. Each week, we will pick our Snollygoster of the Week.
We look for one person, one group that embodies the term Snollygoster. Intelligent but unprincipled. Shrewd. This week, we pick Advocates for Responsible Taxation. That is the group that opposes the ticket tax here in Columbus. They are now collecting signatures to put the 5% tax on big entertainment and sports events on the ballot.
Advocates for Responsible Taxation uses an acronym, ART.
Oh.
So one could imagine that a signature gatherer standing on the street corner might be saying, "Hi, I'm with ART. Oh. Would you sign a petition to put the ARTS ticket tax on the ballot?"
And of course, putting that ticket tax on the ballot might lead to its defeat, which would hurt the ARTS, which stand to gain from the ticket tax. And if it gets on the ballot, you can see the lawn signs. ART says vote no on issues 1 and 2, even though voting yes would provide money for, wait for it,
the arts.
The arts. Sneaky. Shrewd.
Yeah, it would be a shrewd move.
So the
shrewd, but as you say, intelligent.
Yes. Advocates for Responsible Taxation, or ART, ART for short, you are our Snollygosters of the week.
Congratulations to ART. If you have a suggestion for the Snollygoster of the week,
we want to hear from you.
We do want to hear from you. Send an email to snollygoster@wosu.org. Please put Snollygoster of the week in the subject line so it jumps out. And if it's good, we'll read it.
Because we get so many emails. We need that subject line to jump out. Are we up to what, 7, 8, 10 now? Come on, people. Send us a Christmas card.
We'll get them, Mike. Those emails will start coming. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster on WOSU Public Media.